Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is December 9th, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is CT Scans to Rule Out Subarachnoid Hemorrhage in a Non-Academic Setting. And we have not one, but two wonderful guest skeptics. We have Farine, who is the chief resident in emergency medicine at George Washington University, specifically in charge of the medical education resident curriculum and the grand round schedule. She's also the co-founder and lead author of the Allium Air Pro series and is definitely pursuing an academic career in medical education. She was born and raised in Calgary, Alberta, and has constantly stood out with her Canadian accent, eh? She will always be a diehard Calgary Flames fan and is joining the University of Calgary faculty in August when she completes her residency. Welcome to the SGEM, Farine.
Thanks, Dr. Milne. I am so excited and honored to be a guest skeptic and excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you for saying so, but you've got to lose some of that American accent. You've got to bury yourself in the role, Farine. You've got to say, oh, thanks a lot, eh? I'm really thrilled. No doubt about it. Well, I've come all the way to Washington, D.C. to hang out with another Canadian.
I needed to invite someone who gets how I pronounce certain words and thinks in Celsius.
Oh, yes. All right, we have Stephanie Gilbert, and she is the chief resident in emergency medicine also at George Washington University in the heart of the nation's capital. Her career interests include ED administration with a focus on operations and quality improvement. Prior to residency, she completed a Bachelor of Science degree in kinesiology at the University of Michigan. Oh yes, that's the Wolverines, not the Spartans. After that, she went to medical school at Wayne State University in downtown Detroit, and she is proud of her Michigan roots and a true Wolverine at heart. Welcome to the SGEM, Stephanie.
Thank you very much. I am honored to be a guest here on SGEM and a part of today's intriguing discussion.
Well, this is an SGEM Journal Club edition, and we've done a few others before. We've done McGill. We also did one at Queen's University, McMaster University, and New York City. Let's remind everyone about the SGEM Journal Club rules for the audience here.
Number one, you must talk and tweet about SGEM Journal Club.
Yes, you must talk. You must tweet about the Journal Club.
Number two, the answer to any SGEM Journal Club question can be, it all depends.
And I learned that from my EBM mentor, Andrew Worcester. So when it comes to evidence-based medicine, the answer is it all depends.
Rule number three, don't panic. Even your faculty is not sure of some of the answers.
Yes, and that's a great one. And that's a theme to the whole SGEM model. Don't panic. All bleeding stops. Eventually. No one bleeds forever. So keep your head, focus on the problem, and get it done. But don't panic.
Number four, it's all about the methods.
The best part of any paper is the methods section.
And last but not least, rule number five, be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on SGEM Journal Club.
Absolutely. So, what's the best part of attending George Washington EM program?
Well, the best part, there are so many great aspects to our program here at George Washington, but a few highlights are the people for sure. We are a culturally diverse bunch here, with a number of residents and faculty who have been involved in a variety of non-medical pursuits prior to beginning their career in emergency medicine. We're also in the heart of the nation's capital, just blocks from the White House, and this presents infinite numbers of projects to get involved with.
And what's been the best part of living in Washington, D.C. for a Canadian?
Well, living in the city that Scandal, House of Cards, and Homeland are set in, it's kind of awesome. But seriously, D.C. is a great diverse city filled with tons of free museums, great restaurants, monuments that you got a chance to run around this morning. And did I mention the Obama sightings?
So, why don't we start this episode of the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine Journal Club with a case scenario.
Miss Jones is a 45-year-old woman who presents to her local community hospital with, quote, the worst headache of her life. It started suddenly 4 hours ago. She has a normal neurologic exam. Of course, she gets a non-contrast head CT that is read as normal by your local radiologist.
We've talked about subarachnoid hemorrhage a couple of times on the SGEM, with the most recent time being a hot-off-the-press paper by David Sayer et al. In Academic Emergency Medicine. Do you remember the number needed to tap from that retrospective UK study?
Yes, the number needed to tap to diagnose one aneurysm not picked up on CT scan was 250.
There are a couple of studies suggesting that a lumbar puncture was not automatically needed to exclude the diagnosis of a subarachnoid hemorrhage in patients presenting with an acute headache. This is due to a negative predictive value of a normal CT head performed at an academic tertiary center within 6 hours of headache onset of 100%.
100%. So Jeff Perry's group even came up with the Ottawa subarachnoid hemorrhage rule that we covered on SGEM number 48. I don't like rules. I like to call them tools. Rules were meant to be broken. The bottom line from that rule was this tool was not ready for prime time because of the need for validation studies.
There has been at least one validation study done by Belalio et al. Of the Ottawa subarachnoid hemorrhage tool, showing 100% sensitivity and 7.6% specificity. They concluded the low specificity and its applicability to only a minority of ED patients limited the potential usefulness of the Ottawa subarachnoid hemorrhage rule.
This study was done at an academic center. There have been no studies, however, done at non-academic sites until now.
Until now. Dun, dun, dun. So what's the clinical question we've put together to try to answer on today's episode of the SGEM?
So the clinical question is, can a subarachnoid hemorrhage be ruled out in a patient presenting to a non-academic emergency department within 6 hours of headache onset by a head CT read as normal by a community staff radiologist?
So what's the reference for this study?
The reference is CT within 6 hours of headache onset to rule out subarachnoid hemorrhage in non-academic hospitals, published by Block et al. In the American Academy of Neurology in March 2015.
All right, so we have the PICO. What was the population?
The population was adult patients presenting to a non-academic emergency department with spontaneous acute headache suspected for subarachnoid hemorrhage, negative CT scan, and who had a lumbar puncture performed.
And what was the inclusion criteria?
Normal level of consciousness without focal deficits, head CT within 6 hours after headache onset and reported negative, and a lumbar puncture performed greater than 12 hours after headache onset.
And who did they exclude from the study?
They excluded patients with a Glasgow Coma Scale less than 15 at presentation, an unknown time of ictus, age 16 years or younger, and a lumbar puncture performed earlier than 12 hours after headache onset.
And what was the intervention in the study?
A lumbar puncture to achieve identification of CT-negative subarachnoid hemorrhage patients.
And so they didn't have a comparator group in this study. There was no comparison, there was no control group. What was the outcome?
The outcome was negative predictive value for detection of subarachnoid blood by staff radiologists working in a non-academic hospital.
So here are the actual author's conclusions. Our results support a change of practice wherein a lumbar puncture can be withheld in patients with a head CT performed in less than 6 hours after the headache onset and reported negative for the presence of a subarachnoid hemorrhage by a staff radiologist in the described non-academic setting. All right, so we're going to go through the quality checklist for diagnostic studies, and there are 10 questions we're going to go through. The first question we want to know is this a clinical problem that's well defined?
Yes. Headache represents 1 to 2% of all ED visits, and a subarachnoid hemorrhage is one of the most devastating etiologies of headache. Yet considerable controversy exists about whether an LP is essential to rule out the diagnosis after a negative CT using contemporary high-resolution scanners.
Question 2, the study population, does it represent the target population that we would normally be interested in for this condition?
Yes, definitely. Patients with concerning headaches will present to non-academic emergency departments.
Yeah, they just don't show up to the ivory towers. They can show up anywhere, anytime, and we've got to be ready for them. So question 3, the study population included or focused on those in the emergency department?
Yes.
Number 4, the study patients were recruited consecutively. There was no selection bias.
No, retrospective chart review.
Number 5, the diagnostic evaluation. Was it sufficiently comprehensive and applied equally to all patients, i.e. no evidence of verification bias?
No. Although every patient had a CT and LP, only the positive LP patients got the gold standard, a CTA, MRA, digital subtraction angiography or DSA, or a 3-month follow-up.
Question 6, all diagnostic criteria, were they explicit, valid, and reproducible, i.e. no incorporation bias?
No.
Question 7, the reference standard was appropriate, no imperfect gold standard bias?
Unsure. They had a gold standard for CT interpretation. This was the academic physician's reading of the head CT for blood. However, there apparently is no internationally accepted gold standard for the interpretation of CSF spectrophotometry.
All right, question 8. All undiagnosed patients underwent sufficiently long and comprehensive follow-up. In other words, no double gold standard.
No. Differential verification bias, or double gold standard, occurs when the test results influence the choice of the reference standard. So a positive index test gets an immediate gold standard test. In this case, if the lumbar puncture was positive, most patients went on to get further neuroimaging, although not all did. In contrast, the patients with a negative index test, which is a lumbar puncture that was negative, got clinical follow-up for disease. This can impact sensitivity and specificity.
Now, to be fair, the authors did admit that their follow-up may have been incomplete and patients could have presented to another hospital with a subarachnoid hemorrhage.
If you want to understand the direction of bias in studies of diagnostic test accuracy, then read the paper by Cohn et al. In the Academic Emergency Medicine Journal, November 2013.
All right, so question number 9. The likelihood ratios of the tests in question is presented or can be calculated from the information provided.
No. The authors did not report 2x2 tables, and they cannot be reconstructed from the data presented, since they only reported CT-negative patients. In order to reconstruct these 2x2 tables, they would need to report CT-positive and CT-negative patients. Therefore, sensitivity, specificity, and likelihood ratios cannot be computed.
And the final question, question number 10, the precision of the measure of diagnostic performance, is it satisfactory?
Yep, it is. They provided 95% confidence intervals that were narrow.
Didn't they sound smart? Didn't they sound really smart? Let's give them a hand for that. Good job, guys. That's the critical appraisal part. That's when you're going through and probing the literature for the bias. Now what we're going to do is we're going to give the key results. So what were the key results in this Block et al. Study?
So, there were 760 consecutive patients who presented to one of 11 non-academic hospitals with an acute headache suspicious for a subarachnoid hemorrhage. These 760 patients all had a CT head within 6 hours after headache onset, reported as negative for the presence of blood by the non-academic staff radiologist, and had a lumbar puncture greater than 12 hours after onset of an acute headache.
The patient cohort had a median age of 45 years, and 61% were women.
Well, we don't want to bury the lead, all right? And their main outcome that they were looking for was the negative predictive value.
So the negative predictive value was 99.9%, with a 95% confidence interval between 99.3% and 100%.
Lumbar punctures were positive for the presence of bilirubin in 52 patients. Independent review of the community radiologist by the academic radiologist found only one patient with a perimesencephalic non-aneurysmal subarachnoid hemorrhage with a benign clinical course.
Of the 51 patients with negative CTs and positive LPs, 28 went on to have CTA, MRA, or DSA. 8 aneurysms were identified but felt determined that rupture was unlikely.
20 patients had no aneurysm identified on further imaging, and 23 patients did not have any other imaging on clinical grounds. None were thought to have subarachnoid hemorrhage based on a median follow-up time of 53 months.
So it's time to talk a little nerdy. There are lots of things that we could have commented on this particular paper, but guess how many points I came up with?
I have no idea.
5. My favorite number. All right, so number 1, Let's talk about the methods. This was a retrospective chart review.
A retrospective chart review is not a very high level of evidence.
And this does not make the conclusions wrong, but it does weaken the strength of any conclusions that can be made from this type of study.
Just because a retrospective chart review is a lower form of evidence does not mean it should not have strong methods. There are published quality checklists for retrospective chart reviews to assist researchers, such as Gilbert et al. And Worster et al.
The chart review methods were not described well in this study. There are many questions we have about who abstracted the data, were they blinded to the hypothesis, what was their training, and how was the quality of their abstraction assessed? And this information would have been helpful in assessing this study.
STARD. This stands for Standards for Reporting Diagnostic Accuracy Studies, or STARD. Quite a mouthful. It is a checklist to help readers judge the potential for bias in a diagnostic study. The latest list contains 30 quality checks for the completeness and transparency of reporting diagnostic studies.
And there's no mention of following these guidelines. And the lack of adherence to the STARD reporting standards makes it difficult to interpret the result. The second thing we wanted to mention was the whole idea of negative predictive value.
This is the proportion of people with a negative test who do not have the disease. The negative predictive value is calculated by taking the true negatives and dividing them by all of the negatives, both true and false. This statistic depends on the prevalence of disease. Therefore, the accuracy of a negative CT scan to rule out subarachnoid hemorrhage cannot be interpreted without considering the pretest probability.
Yeah, and this is going to get a little Bayesian thinking here, but I think it's really important. A very sensitive test, even one that's very specific, will have a large number of false positives if the prevalence of the disease is low. So if a CT scan is done in every headache patient, low pretest probability for subarachnoid hemorrhage, it will have a fantastic negative predictive value. So if prevalence is low, the number needed to scan will be very high. In fact, any test would look good to rule out disease if no one has the disease, and all the positive tests would be false positives.
The prevalence of subarachnoid in this study was extremely low at 0.1%. This means the negative predictive value will be close to 100% no matter what test is used.
So the third point we wanted to bring up was the lack of gold standard.
8 patients with intracranial aneurysms had negative head CTs but positive LPs. 7 were thought to be false positives based on further CSF testing.
And they acknowledge, again, that there's uncertainty of this interpretation because there is no international accepted gold standard existing for the interpretation of this type of CSF test. The fourth thing we wanted to talk about was they were asking the wrong question.
So this doesn't answer the fundamental question we want answered. Do we need to do an LP to rule out a subarachnoid hemorrhage after a negative CT? This study demonstrates that non-academic radiologists are very good at identifying blood on a third-generation CT scanner compared to academic radiologists.
There was only one case out of 760 scans that the academic radiologist felt did show blood that was not identified by the community radiologists. The blood was in the basal cistern and consistent with a non-aneurysmal perimesencephalic hemorrhage. The remaining 51 out of 52 positive lumbar punctures were considered false positives.
Okay, and here's the fifth point. This is the final point we wanted to make in the talk nerdy section, and that's about harm. When considering a diagnostic test, we need also to consider the harm. LPs are not benign procedures and can cause post-LP headaches, and that's what the person presented with, a headache. Infection is another possibility, nerve damage, and bleeding around the spinal cord. It is well recognized that harm is underreported in studies.
The authors did not provide any information whether or not any of the 52 patients undergoing a lumbar puncture experienced any adverse events due to the diagnostic test itself. However, they did mention in their discussion, quote, a lumbar puncture is associated with discomfort for the patient, costs, and may induce a potentially life-threatening complication such as subdural hematoma or cerebral venous sinus thrombosis in rare cases, unquote.
And there are also downstream consequences of false positive CSF results. In this study, 8 patients had aneurysms on subsequent vascular imaging. How will that knowledge affect these individuals, and what impact will it have on their future health care? So those are the 5 points we want to make. Now we're going to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to our conclusions.
So we agree that a lumbar puncture is not a useful test to diagnose subarachnoid hemorrhage in a low prevalence population with a negative head CT.
So can you give us a bottom line?
I can, Dr. Milne. These community radiologists were just as good at reading head CT scans as academic radiologists when looking for blood using a third generation scanner.
And how about a case resolution?
We feel that Ms. Jones has a low pretest probability of having a subarachnoid hemorrhage. Her head CT is negative, and we discuss the risks and benefits of a lumbar puncture. A shared decision is made. She decides not to proceed with any further testing and will return if she develops focal neurologic symptoms, if her pain increases, if she loses consciousness, has a seizure, or is otherwise worried.
Great. And now, how are you going to take this information and apply it clinically?
So a negative head CT read by a community radiologist using a third generation scanner within 6 hours of headache onset is sufficient to exclude the diagnosis of subarachnoid hemorrhage in a low prevalence population.
So here's an interesting part of the whole process. How do we bring this information to the patient's bedside? And this is something that I might be able to say when I'm talking to a patient like the one you've presented. It might go something like this. Subarachnoid hemorrhages can present with sudden headache. These types of bleeds in the brain can be devastating and even deadly. And our local radiologist looked at the CT scan of your brain and didn't see any bleeding. They are just as good as radiologists at the big academic hospitals for reading these tests. CT scans are very good to rule out bleeds when done within 6 hours of headache onset, but no test is 100%. A lumbar puncture could be performed if we were really concerned, and that involves sticking a needle in your back to get fluid from around your spinal column. This test can have complications. A common side effect of the test itself is a headache. In addition, often the test is falsely positive. That means doing even more testing that could potentially cause harm. There are studies suggesting that hundreds or maybe even thousands of LPs would need to be done to find one of these serious life-threatening conditions not seen on CT scan. What do you want to do? All right, and that sound reminds me that it's time for the Keener contest, or the Gunner contest. And last week's winner was Greg Costello. He knew 3 ways to reverse warfarin included vitamin K, fresh frozen plasma, and prothrombin complex concentrates. We now have another special guest to give this week's Keener contest. I've asked him to come onto the show because I did such a bad job pronouncing his name when he won. This is Stash. Stash, please give us your full name.
Stash, like Josh Hutchinski. You sneeze that out.
Oh, just sneeze it out. Gesundheit. All right. Well, what's the Keener contest?
The Keener contest this week, name the German physician credited for introducing the lumbar puncture for diagnostic and therapeutic purposes.
An excellent question for an episode on spinal taps. If you know the answer, send it to the sjam@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Stephanie Farin, thank you very much for inviting me to Washington.
Thank you very much, Dr. Milne. We really appreciate you making the trip from Canada down to Washington, D.C. to visit us and help us practice our evidence-based medicine skills here at George Washington University.
Well, if you want the SJAM to come to your program in the new year and do a live episode of the SJAM Journal Club, then send me an email. But let's hear it from the George Washington Emergency Medicine Program. And the final part of the episode is the tagline. So in stereo, can you give the SJAM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to you next week.